Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. My guest today is Bob DeSalvio. Bob is the head of Genting New York. That's the division you're head of, right? Okay, great. He's head of here. We are here at Resorts World New York City at Aqueduct Racetrack. And then he's also controls the Genting, the Resorts World in the Catskills and in Bimini as well.
Bimini and Hudson Valley.
That's a great property. Yeah.
So we have three in New York and, of course, one in Bimini.
Yeah, absolutely. The Hudson Valley is new, right?
It is. That's open about 3 years now, and what a great community. We've really enjoyed it, meeting a whole new audience well.
Okay,
that Hudson Valley crowd is really a great crowd.
Sure, sure. And that's, you know, at the edge of the New York suburbs, so I bet you get a lot of local play out there.
Absolutely.
Great, great. Well, first of all, congratulations on receiving a license. I mean, what a process that was. What was it, 3 years that we went through it, and it kept changing, the goals kept changing, the finish line kept changing. But then as soon as you got the license, boom, you were open in record time. How prepared were you, you know, to open when you finally were granted the license?
Well, first of all, Roger, it's great to have you here and welcome. But it really was quite a process. I mean, you think about it. We've been in business now about 15 years here at Resorts World. But from day one, I know that Chairman Lim and Huey Lim and the whole team back in Malaysia had been hoping that someday we would be able to convert from a VLT facility to a full commercial casino.
Sure.
And it was so great when that actually happened. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of prep that went into it.
Sure.
We had planned for years about how we were going to convert the building, worked with a great architect, and set out on a process with the state to get building permits. That process was a good 2.5 years so that we would be ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lucky enough that we had some available space within the building.
Right.
As you know, this was a multi-level track facility back in the day. And that gave us the ability to have, in a sense, 100,000 square feet that was totally underutilized up on our third level. I did take a shot and started doing some early construction for the cage and count room, hoping that we were going to go ahead and get the license. So that, you know, gave me about a 6-month lead on that.
Sure.
But for the rest of the conversion, I had to wait to see whether we got the license.
Sure, right.
And when we did on December 15th, we just went at it.
Yeah.
I mean, in a big way.
24 hours a day.
We literally got open a 100,000 square foot casino in 4 months.
Yeah.
And it was remarkable. I have to tell you, the men and women of the trades did an amazing job. Holt Construction was our contractor, and they're still here doing additional parts of the building. They actually built our Hudson Valley facility.
Okay.
It's a great company. They're working over at JFK. But they marshaled up a great workforce that came in and just hit this really hard. We wanted to get open as quickly as possible.
Right.
We needed additional space in the building. Mm-hmm. So on April 28th, we actually closed the VLT facility at midnight on the 27th of April. And then 8 a.m., we opened floors 2 and 3 in this building as a full-fledged commercial casino. Mm-hmm. So it was literally an overnight transition.
Okay. So my first visit here was about 10 years ago, and it was, I guess you could call it the slots in a box, right? And they weren't even slots, they were VLTs, which, as everybody knows, isn't as attractive to the players as real slot machines. And so the transition has been remarkable, and we just did a tour of the casino floor and the three levels of the casino floor, and it's pretty spectacular. What kind of process did you go through when deciding where you're going to put the tables, where you're going to put all the new slots, and how that was going to transition?
So we started out by renovating our second floor long before the licensing process really got in earnest.
Right.
So we had that set up, and we figured, well, if we could get that floor reorganized and redecorated, then what we could do is just swap out the VLTs, bring in the new commercial slots, and do a fairly quick conversion on the second floor. What was really great about that is there is such incredible new product. And with the VLT market, you're limited to very few titles.
Mm-hmm.
So this opened up a whole new world. Scott Molina, who is just an amazing talent in terms of slots, worked with all the manufacturers, and we literally put in the latest and greatest. Some of my colleagues in the industry have come through the property and said it looks like a G2E floor with
all
the new products on it, all brand new stuff. And the customers have taken to it. It took all of about 5 seconds
right.
for them to come in the door on the first day and go, wow,
yeah.
this is amazing with all the new product. We got some wonderful theme rooms. But as you know, the slot market has changed dramatically.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just the fact that we could present 2,500 brand new games on day one, customers were all over it. And I'm right. sure you saw from the revenue numbers were pretty outstanding.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, we don't have enough space yet.
Sure. Yeah.
And then, you know, while we were working on that, then, of course, we had to decide, well, we needed as many tables as we could. So we decided to allocate almost all of the third floor to tables. Mm-hmm. We put in 242 tables, and then we have about 85 slots just around the perimeter right. of the third floor. And what's been remarkable about that is in talking to our customers, especially the table games customers, we never had tables here for
sure,
15
right, yeah.
years. They come in, but they just remarked about how amazing it was to have that many tables in an area with relatively few slots. So they felt very comfortable immediately that it was a table house.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so right now we've got two floors in action, and now we're converting the first floor. We had to close that floor at mm-hmm. midnight on the 27th. Literally start stripping it out and rebuilding it. And we're about ready to open up the half of the first floor. That'll be followed by the other half. And then we have some high-limit gaming areas that are going to be spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Our international room, our Resorts World Club, where it'll have Salon Privés, and the typical great experience that you would expect Genting to deliver, like we do in Singapore,
sure.
Malaysia,
sure.
or Las Vegas. We need those amenities to be able to attract all the customers that we really want to attract
right.
Here at Resorts World.
Yeah, no question about that. So when the slot players came in, obviously they go looking for their favorite VLT games and they're gone, but then they see all this new product. I guess they have new favorite games.
You know, I was actually a little worried that we have got such a loyal customer base. Mm-hmm. I was a little worried that they were going to say, where is my old VLT?
Sure, right.
But I think that when we opened up this world of all the new equipment, I can't remember a single customer telling me, I wish I had my old VLT back.
Right. Yeah.
Because I do think this product is just so much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, thank God that was a very smooth transition
yeah.
for the slot customers.
Sure, no question. So then staffing up your table games, you had to hire thousands of dealers, supervisors, bit bosses, well, I don't know what they call them these days, but that's what's
still
what
called a bit boss
okay,
and then
shift boss and yeah,
yeah
okay,
table games managers
great.
And pit bosses.
So how did you find all these people, especially the dealers? Because as a former dealer myself, I know it takes a while to get that skill up. Did you hold a school? Did you hire experienced dealers?
We did a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had made a commitment to the community that we would want to train and hire local folks.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we did was we set up our own dealer school on site. We opened it up to the local audience.
Yeah.
It was amazing. We did a social media campaign, and we had 450 spots available for the first round for the
right.
dealer school. Roger, in 3 days, it was full.
Yeah.
Without a single paid ad, just some social media. There
yeah.
was that much of a pent-up demand. Part of that was because for the last 3 or 4 years, we've been working with CUNY, the city college, and York for intro to gaming classes.
Right.
And we wanted to make sure that the folks, especially new young folks that are trying to learn about our business and
right.
want to get into it, that they'd have some opportunities. So the dealer school filled right up. We had the graduates come out 10 weeks later. That created about 400 spots. And then we went to the outside and looked for folks that had experience because we know we needed a mix of both.
Sure, right.
And what we found is that there are people that were in Atlantic City, Pennsylvania, Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
That wanted to repatriate back to the New York area.
Right, sure.
A lot of them, their families are here.
Mm-hmm.
We even had 80 dealers transfer from our Catskills property,
okay.
which was great because
yeah.
they already knew the Genting way
right.
and how we run things. So it was a little bit a mix of all, but we doubled our workforce within a few weeks. We held our orientations on April 13th, and we opened on April 28th, and it all happened like in the blink of an eye.
Okay.
And they jumped right in, and they're doing really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched some of them last night, and they seem to be, they know what they're doing, and nobody's looking right over their shoulder, so obviously you trust them pretty much.
Yeah, we do. Of course, you have your
yeah.
supervision and surveillance
right, sure.
and all the things that are important to protect both the customers and our company. But they've done amazingly well. I will tell you, there wasn't much time for a lot of training.
Right, sure.
They literally jumped right in, and we were busy on day one. So I think the cycle of going through and learning was on hyper mode here for this opening.
Well, I experienced that myself in Atlantic City. When when Caesars opened, they threw out on the floor, and you were dealing at seven spots for 10 hours a night.
Right. You know it from the early AC days.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, the reports that you've guaranteed them a certain toke rate?
We did. That's actually part of the plan. We felt that people were going to move into an area that is not inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So you think about, let's say you were in Pennsylvania or in the Catskills and you want to relocate here. We felt that they would need some certainty in terms of income. So we did put in a minimum guarantee and also a very good base rate. Mm-hmm. And I think that gave them the comfort. And that's probably why we had such a big uptake right at the beginning.
Okay, great. How about casino hosts? That's another area that, that you've got to have some experienced people in.
You know, we did. We did the same thing there. A mix of experienced people that had either come through the ranks with our company or some that, same thing, have come from the regional area. We've had some come from Vegas.
Okay.
Folks that had moved out to Vegas a long time ago and wanted to come back to the East Coast. So we've got a mix. And on the new ones, you know, we just had Nick Ippolito in here for training.
Nick's a great evening.
You know what? He is an amazing talent for sales training.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that the team members that are new that went through the program here, they've really enjoyed it. But he's really good at what he does. Sure. You know, he's been doing this for years,
and
he's got that way about him. And we even had a number of folks that are non-gaming that went to the class just because they wanted to learn about what's going on in the casino.
Yeah, I've talked to a couple of people who went through his classes, and they learned so much about it, for sure. So when you talk about the slot numbers, how do they compare the slot numbers that you had in the last month in May to your best month in the VLT numbers?
So it was a little bit surprising how quickly the customers took to the new machines. Mm-hmm. The numbers are now out there publicly. Right. We did almost, it was 97 net in slot, 97 million net in slots, almost like 1,300 win per unit, which is a very high number. I don't think the industry's ever seen that number before. And so, you know, I think back on what were the highest numbers that we ever had in the time that I was here, probably around 90, about 90 million in a month. And remember, that was in when we used to have 5,000 and in some cases up to 6,000 units.
Right.
That 97 million was on 2,500 units.
Yeah.
So it was a quick uptake on the slots. Actually, we really want to open more units as quickly as possible, and we're doing that this summer because on some days, quite honestly, it's a little too tight. You know, we've got to. I want to make sure that the players have good comfort. I want to make sure they can find the game that they want to play. You know how important that is to a slot customer. It's one of the most important things when they choose between what casino they want to go to. And so we need more machines as quickly as possible, and we're going to open them. But the uptake was amazing.
Okay. So what is there a regulation in New York on your hold percentage or payback percentage?
There is. I think it blended out. You can't be any more than 10, I believe it is.
So you have to pay back 90%.
Oh, yeah. And we're higher than that. I think we were 92-93% in the first month. We do have a number of ETGs. As you know, those have lower hold percentage than the slots, as well as a number of poker games. So we're giving people a good variety, and I think we wound up at about the norm, in that 93% range.
So in addition to a larger casino, you had to have other expansion plans of non-gaming amenities. We're sitting here in the Hyatt Hotel, which is a really first-class hotel. I give it 4 stars at least. So what are some of your other plans for expansion?
So immediately we want to add another 400 rooms to the Hyatt, except we're going to rebrand it as the Resorts World Hotel.
Okay.
And we've been talking to Hyatt about putting that in the Unbound collection.
Sure.
Just so we can solidify
and
more
that's the collection
brands.
Of non-Hyatt branded.
Right, but we love working with Hyatt. Sure. We want the reservation system. But, you know, this property is really known as Resorts World. So that's something that we've been talking to, and we'll ultimately work that out with Hyatt. And then we have a very large expansion project that we're actually going to be doing a groundbreaking for the next phase of development very quickly this summer. It'll include a new parking garage, another 3,000 car garage. It'll include an arena of 7,000 seats, a new Crockford's Hotel that'll be the epitome of luxury, more gaming areas, more restaurant spaces, a spa, a day club. We will become really a truly top-notch integrated resort.
Okay.
And that development will take approximately 3 years to build it out. We want to build it as quickly as possible. And our first phase was to renovate the existing building.
Right.
And this way we can operate while we're building the new building. It's literally right next door, and we attach one to the other.
Okay.
And so the whole idea was to have as minimal disruption as possible.
Okay. So you're right next to JFK Airport, one of the major airports in the whole country. Has that helped you in terms of getting customers in?
100%. As I'm sure many in the industry know, JFK is going through a complete transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Port Authority is putting in about $19 billion with their airline partners to add new terminals and renovate everything over there, new parking, roadways. It's really a complete renovation along the line of what happened over at LaGuardia, which is really amazing now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, you know, the top airports in the country.
Right.
So that redevelopment means a lot to us.
Mm-hmm.
This year, JFK is expecting to do about 62 million people through the property. This new expansion gives them the capability to go up to about 100 million.
Mm-hmm.
International business is critical for us.
Right. Sure.
You know, already for FIFA, we're seeing customers come over from our property in Malaysia and Singapore.
Yeah.
We have a suite over at MetLife Stadium where we're entertaining customers. And so there was an immediate impact. It's so easy for them if you're flying from Hong Kong or your Changi Airport in Singapore right to JFK, and then we're right here 10 minutes away. We also, there's a whole nother market that I'm not sure people really thought much about, and that is the fact that there is a lot of traffic, you know, in the area, no doubt about it, in the New York market. And so people have a tendency to not want to take a chance if they're getting on a morning flight at JFK.
Right.
So we have a whole market that comes here the night before they're traveling.
Right, yeah, sure.
They come to the casino, they play a little bit, they'll eat in the steakhouse, they sleep here, they get up in the morning, they jump on a flight right out of JFK.
Yeah.
It's like a whole market segment that I was never really quite used to in any other property. So I think the fact that we have the exposure to JFK, what they're developing over there, the ease of our customers coming in. You know, we have 30 casinos in the UK, from London.
Yeah,
come right into JFK and then boom, you're right here.
Mm-hmm.
So we do think that that is going to help us add that international twist for sure. And then, of course, people coming in from all around the United States.
Right.
So I love being right across the street from JFK.
It works. Works
and by the way, for the Port Authority, they love that we're here, because they really need quality hotel product here at JFK.
No,
so this is a two-way street between the state, Port Authority, and us.
Okay. Now how about working with your other properties, the Singapore properties and the Las Vegas property? I mean, obviously, they have all these high-powered casino hosts as well.
Absolutely. And it's funny. It's not just the players.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own casino management system called Dynamic.
Okay.
That system is in our properties out of the country. Those folks came over and helped us with the install. They have the institutional knowledge about the software. They were enormously helpful as we were trying to get through this opening process. So from sharing ideas, sharing the talent, making sure that we can all work together, and then, of course, on the marketing side, we're already seeing the business flow. We're going to move all of our properties onto the Dynamic system, casino management system. We're already here in Hudson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be flipping the Catskills to the Dynamic system. They're already on it over in Asia. And so at least here in the United States, we want to be on a one-card program for everybody and make sure that we get the benefits of the true marketing power of having everybody be able to just go from property to property. And we're also, with our sister properties here in New York, we've already started transportation network back and forth.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Buses leave here right out of the parking lot, go to the Catskills. We're starting this week helicopter service that'll take people from JFK. We have a heliport at Resorts World Catskills, so we'll drop them right there. We have wonderful facilities. We have the Monster Golf Course.
Sure.
And now that we've got table players here, they're very interested in golf. We hosted out at the U.S. Open in Shinnecock and had a great setup up out there. And talking to our customers, they love this Monster Golf Course that we did with Reese Jones. And so our idea is to tie all of the New York properties together, send people down to Bimini, send people to Malaysia, send people to Singapore, send people back and forth to the UK. We want to use the full power of the Genting network to be able to basically take care of a customer anywhere in the world.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, the operation in Vegas is still just picking up. I mean, there's still a lot of international people they need to bring in. But it's how are you working with those the Vegas bar?
Excellent. Matter of fact, the whole Vegas team was just here a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They've got a wonderful facility out there.
Yeah.
Really amazing.
It is.
Matter of fact,
beautiful property.
In the first quarter, I think was their best quarter since opening.
Yeah.
So you are correct. The business has been picking up. They found their footing on the hotel side, doing a lot of great group business. The casino facilities are amazing. The restaurants are great. They just opened a couple new restaurants. They have the nightlife. So we're already talking about slot tournaments, table tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
We can send people back and forth.
Sure.
We can play at one property and then have a semifinal or a final at another property.
Okay.
So we're going to rev up all the marketing programs between these sister properties. And, of course, Vegas is such an important market for our New York-based customers.
Sure. So you mentioned conventions in Vegas. I mean, that property is really built for conventions. What's going to be your convention and meeting layout and strategy here?
We are incredibly excited about it. We are building a 30,000 square foot ballroom as part of the new Crockford's property, which will be the largest hotel ballroom in New York City.
Okay.
And so that we've heard this loud and clear from our meeting customers, the fact that we are right across from JFK, that we'll have these amazing convention facilities tied into a fully developed integrated resort. We think our sweet spot will probably be high-end corporate business, and we think that is a great segment, and we're going to be in it in a big way.
Right. And you can start selling that right away because most of that is 3 or 4 years out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're really bullish on the meeting and convention market and specifically the high-end corporate business.
Okay. So let's talk about the gaming taxes.
Sure.
New York has some pretty hefty taxes and fees and community contributions that you're required to make. How does this impact your revenue and, does it change the way you market at all?
So let me talk a little bit about the tax program. When we were putting together our final recommendations as part of the RFA process, we thought about that long and hard. Mm-hmm. And what we offered the state was basically a better tax scenario while we were still in a monopoly position for commercial casinos downstate. And as you know, it's 56%, including the racing support payments, and 30% for table games.
Mm-hmm.
However, we did put in the RFA a most favored nations clause, which basically said when the other guys open, we expect that in order to have some normalcy in the market, that our rate would go down. But we were willing to offer more while we were in a monopoly position.
Okay.
We thought that was the best way to put our best foot forward in order to win one of the licenses.
Right.
And we did
And
through the process. So we think that it was the right call. We felt like we could make it work. We've operated a VLT facility that had a much higher tax rate than that.
Right.
It was actually about 68% in our VLT days. And what that does is it makes you learn how to be a very efficient operator.
Mm-hmm.
And so that didn't scare us away. And then, the 30% on tables is a little bit high.
Right.
And so we do think, though, that'll come down when, of course, Metropolitan Park or Bally open. Then we'll be on an even playing field with the others.
Okay.
And so for us, it worked fine. As far as marketing, we take care of our customers regardless.
Right.
I mean, in reality, the customers don't, it's up to us to figure out our tax scenario. They just want to make sure that if they play here at Resorts World, that we reward them appropriately. And that we do,
yeah.
Even if we if we have to pay a little higher tax rate while we're in a monopoly position.
Okay, so Pennsylvania opened, the casinos in Atlantic City were saying, oh, we're not going to have to worry about them, their tax rate. I think they're over 50% as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they were permitted to write off their marketing expenses. Are you allowed to do that as well?
The state of New York allows us to go no more than 15% is mm-hmm. what is in the legislation. By the way, that's inclusive of free play, match play, free bet,
okay.
any sort of those programs mm-hmm. combined. So we are allowed to take some credit for that,
mm-hmm.
but certainly not at any significant level.
Right. Okay.
You know, and today we're probably below that level,
sure.
probably because it's still new and
sure.
people are earning their rewards points
right.
as part
right.
of the process. But I think New York was thoughtful about it.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to make sure that we had enough in the system so that we could take care of customers but not go too far out there where it could really hurt and spur on unnecessary marketing wars. So I think New York State got that right.
Okay, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I'll have to let somebody who does math way better than I do to figure out whether that's that will help or hurt
sure.
the next city. We'll see about that. So and you mentioned the horse racing fund. I was just over at the Aqueduct Racetrack, which is closing this weekend for the last time, which is kind of sad. I mean, if you followed Aqueduct for all these years, when I grew up in New York, that was the mm-hmm. the big racetrack, even bigger than Belmont. But now it's going away. But I guess you still have to make those racing payments.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny you're bringing up the end of the live racing at Aqueduct. Right. I too know a lot about racing. My uncle on my mom's side was a horse owner,
okay.
and I had a couple cousins that were trainers. So
right.
I too came
sure.
to Belmont Aqueduct and even Monticello Raceway
yeah, right. yeah.
up in the Catskills. However, today I just took a tour of the new Belmont Park.
Okay.
It is amazing. It's amazing. I took a tour because we took a suite in the new building
right.
because we
mm-hmm.
want to make sure we
sure.
have that in the arsenal
right.
For taking care of our customers. And so while we're sad to see the racing end at Aqueduct, the new program is there'll be 10 months at Belmont, mm-hmm. 2 months up at Saratoga.
Okay.
And they have great facilities in both. You
right.
know, in Saratoga they have
yeah.
the classic building,
mm-hmm.
but then they built the 1863 Club, of which we are the primary sponsor
okay.
of the Founders Room. So we love sending customers there.
Mm-hmm.
The new Belmont, you'll have to take a tour on one of your trips up.
Yeah, for sure.
We
yeah.
can help you set that up. It is going to be, I believe, the top horse racing facility in the United States.
Okay.
It's beautiful what they did over mm-hmm. there. So we're happy for them. Our payments do go to help pay for that.
Right.
You know, our racing support payments are used so that NYRA can keep you know, doing things like building the new Belmont and the improvements that they make up in Saratoga. Without that support, I think it would be very difficult for the racing industry.
Sure.
So, you know, that's embedded in the legislation and it's part of the plan. And so over the years, we've wound up being great partners of NYRA,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Being their neighbor here at Aqueduct. And of course, now as a partner sponsor that will be for both Saratoga and for the new Belmont.
Sure. Okay, great. So one of the other kind of twists in the license was that at first it was going to be a 30-year license, and then at the last minute it became a 15-year license. Now, I think that scared some people away, but you were not scared. But I guess Genting is used to that. I mean, in Singapore,
yeah.
they just renewed their license there, so that's not something that's out of the ordinary for Genting.
It didn't scare us a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We really believe we're very good operators. And the fact that it was 15 years, I think there's a 10-year renewal period.
Right.
We said, listen, when that renewal period comes up, we believe the state of New York will look at what we've done here at Resorts World and feel like, wow, we made a really good choice with Genting and
sure.
Resorts World. We're going to put significant dollars, billions of dollars into this building. We are already New York's largest taxpayer through the money that came in on the VLT facility.
Right, sure.
You know, we put in now over $5 billion into the education system in New York. So we have been an amazing partner for the state. And we think when those renewals come up, we'll file the renewal papers and we'll look for our next 10 years to go along with it. So honestly, we didn't think much about it. We would have, sure, you'd love a longer license, but 15 with a 10-year renewal is 25 years. So it was fine for us.
Right. One of the other things that some of the other bidders came ran up against was opposition from the local community. Mm-hmm. You almost had none. I mean, every time they came up, I mean, it was that nobody got to speak against you. I mean,
it was the most amazing process. And listen, I've done these licensing deals, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. And here's what was amazing about it. We have a community relations and a community development team that's led by Michelle Stoddard here at the mm-hmm. property. And for 15 years, they have been in complete lockstep with the local community. When they need help, we support local charities. When Hurricane Sandy came, you know, this was a respite for all the chaos that was going on around here. And so because of that relationship, we held two public hearings as part of the RFA process. Right. There was 108 speakers at two public hearings. Not a single person was opposed to our project. Mm. We had folks that were monitoring kind of the public hearings. Mm-hmm. They have said they have never heard of that in the history of large-scale development in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really heartwarming to really go to those meetings and sit there. And, you know, you never know. When people walk up to a microphone, you don't know exactly what they're going to say.
Right.
And to hear 108 people get up to the microphone and say, these guys deserve a license, oh, my God, that made us feel so good.
Yeah, no question.
And I think we were probably the only project that had that kind of overwhelming community support, including our local community board, 10. Betty Bratton has been, you know, part of that for years. There's new folks that are coming up within the community board. And we showed them our plans. Mm-hmm. They actually offered us advice on the design development process. Right. We listened to them. And so it's been a great partnership with our elected officials, public officials, community board, and the general public at large. And that's why we were able to get through that process with literally no opposition, zero.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they really appreciate your plans for the former racetrack. Explain what's going to happen to the track itself and then the land surrounding it.
So the land that the track is on, the actual oval itself and the back barn mm-hmm. area, is really controlled by the state of New York through the Franchise Oversight Board.
Okay.
They started a public process, mm-hmm. Holding listening hearings and talking to the community about what they thought should happen to the land. We actually did our own version of it, thinking that we're going to be quite a neighbor here.
Right, sure.
Our vision of it is that the actual racetrack portion, we think a good chunk of that should be open and green space. Mm-hmm. So we developed a concept which we call Aqueduct Park, which is Queens answer to Central Park in New York. Mm-hmm. We think it should have walkways, it should have lots of green, it should have some water features. We even thought it would be great to really salute the old racetrack mm-hmm. by having a, you know, like a Heroes Row, some of the great horses that ran here, maybe some statues, mm-hmm. some bronze. And we just thought it would be a lot of fun because there's a lot of people around here that Aqueduct means something
to
them.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we thought that, and then what's the one thing that New York really needs now? Housing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very big deal. You hear the mayor talk about it, you hear the governor talk about it. So we thought where all of the barns are that sort of surround the property, what a great opportunity to do workforce housing. Mm-hmm. Could be rentals, could be some that it's purchased. We're right on the A-train.
Right.
You know, the A-train is the most important line, 32 miles long. It takes you from one end of New York all the way down to Howard Beach where you can connect to AirTrain and get to the terminals at mm-hmm. JFK. So you could live, work, play all in this campus. So that's our vision. Our vision was turn the racetrack into Queen's answer to Central Park and build incredible housing around it and then tie that in with an incredible integrated resort right across the park and then connect it so it's true mass transit-oriented mm-hmm. development. Mm-hmm. That's what we have rattling around in our brains.
Right.
We're hoping that through the process that the state is doing, maybe, just maybe, they'll come to that same conclusion after talking to the neighbors. We talked a lot to the neighbors when we were kind of dreaming up what our vision is for a master plan. I'm hoping that the state kind of winds up in the same place, because that's what we feel would be great here in this in this community. It's a wonderful community.
Okay. I've been hearing some rumors that they might be building a stadium for the New York Jets there.
I don't know if that's going to go over so well. And we love MetLife Stadium.
Yeah.
In fact, we have a suite over there. So I don't know about that. I mean, you know, that's been tried a couple times.
Yeah.
I remember the process that they went through in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
That was a little rocky. So I don't know if a stadium's in the cards. As a matter of fact, if you look out the windows here, you'll notice it's all low rise. It's really a nice community.
Sure.
There's single family homes. Homes that have been passed down through the years. You have height restrictions because of JFK. There's going to be no tall buildings around here. I like the park and the housing idea.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about that. So you've got a four-year head start because the state, again, with its wisdom, said, you know, we're not going to allow any temporary casinos.
No temporary.
So, you know, the Hard Rock Casino, the Metropolitan Park, the Bally's Casino, they're going to take at least 4 years to build. So that gives you a huge head start. How are you going to take advantage of that? Are you going to have a first mover's advantage, do you think?
We really think we do, because don't forget, we have the 15 years prior,
know,
of having a very loyal database. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to have another 4 years, 5 years, or however long it takes to build those facilities. What do we want to do? We want to cement our relationship with our customers and our employees.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the name of the game. We're going to build as fast as humanly possible. And that's why we got a jump on that construction. That's why you saw table games in action here 4 months after we received the license.
Right.
Why? Because every day is another day that we get the opportunity to cement that relationship with the customer and with our employee base. And every extra day that I get, I think, is important. So we're going to move very quickly here to develop the full integrated resort. And yes, when the other properties open, are people going to go over there and check it? Of course they are.
Yeah.
You know how players are. Yeah. They love to see the new kid on the block.
Sure.
And of course, that'll be going on. The beauty of it all, the depth of this market is incredible.
Correct.
Now, why do I say that? Because even looking after the first month of operation, of course, we're going to study what's happening in the area. But just to give you, and I'm sure you probably know this already, maybe the listeners might not have done the research on this yet, but I found it really interesting. Let's take slots, for example. So we had an amazing first month in May, but our Hudson Valley slots, they were up.
Mm-hmm.
Our Catskill slots were up year over year in May.
Right.
Jake's 58, up year over year in May. MGM at Empire City, up year over year. Wind Creek was up year over year. Mount Airy was up year over year. Atlantic City was down, but not by a lot. And it was really just a few properties.
Mm-hmm.
I think Borgata didn't have such a high month, but that could have been hold percentage or something else. So, and again, this is only one full month that I'm talking about, but I thought it was very interesting that Catskills, Hudson Valley, Wind Creek, Mount Airy, Jake's, MGM were all up. And so really what happened here? It's new market. And we think that this market is incredibly underpenetrated. And so, and listen, I'd be thrilled if all of our competitors in the surrounding area are doing well and we're hitting the numbers that we had hoped for. This is amazing for everybody.
Yeah, right. So you've had experience in all of the surrounding jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. You started it in Atlantic City. You know, you ran Wind Creek when it was Sands Bethlehem and Encore in Boston Harbor. Obviously, they're all a little concerned about what's going to happen here in New York. What would you do to mitigate the impact you're going to have on them?
So I think each one of those markets has their own unique attributes.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start with Atlantic City.
Sure.
You know, we're never going to replace being on the beach and the boardwalk. I mean, I worked in Atlantic City for 18 years.
Right.
You know, Caesars, Bally, Sands. And Atlantic City's got great qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and hopefully by us opening, what does it do? It spurs on properties to think about what they're going to do next. Mm-hmm. What's the next feature they want? Who's right. opening a new beach bar? Who's got another celebrity chef coming in? Who's working on a different twist for the nightclub business? Who's focusing on the convention business? I think as these properties open up in the region, everybody has to up their game. And I think if they do that, I don't think this is going to be a big deal for mm-hmm. the regional market. Why? Because the depth of this market is unbelievable. And there's a lot of untapped demand. We're getting people coming in from Long Island that they're not even regular casino players.
Yeah.
They just heard about it because we've been advertising like crazy. I mean, that's a market into itself. You got 3.5 million people on Long Island with pretty good wealth,
yeah.
you know, on the mm-hmm. island. We're going to introduce a bunch of new people. Wing Creek, you know, it's funny. I loved when we developed Bethlehem.
Right.
I think it, you know, and I remember talking to Mayor Callahan back in the day when I was there. There was a lot of trepidation. Then the casino came in, and I remember I was sitting, when I was about to leave, I sat with the mayor, and he said, you know what's amazing? He goes, crime went down in mm-hmm. Bethlehem.
Right.
We have more money because of the host community agreement. You guys employed, it was, I think at the time, 2,500 new employees. They developed their own community around the property. Lehigh University came down off the mountain and brought, everyone was so worried that, oh my God, Lehigh students, are they going to come over? Well, they can gamble if they're 21 or older. If not, we're going to catch them at the door.
Yeah.
And none of the fears that were worried about came to fruition, and it was actually the reverse.
Right.
I understand the Porch Creek tribe that runs the place now does a great job. They mm-hmm. have casinos all over the place. I hear, I don't know for a fact, but I hear that they're even talking now about more non-gaming development at the property, the rest of the 124 acres of the Bethlehem Steel Plant.
Mm-hmm.
They'll figure it out. They're going to figure, hey, if Bob's doing something over there, then yep. guess what? We're going to do something different over here. And so I think everybody has to up their game. And if they do that, I don't think I'm going to really cause any issues in the regional market. I think we're going to grow and develop our own new market. And yes, we're going to all trade some players back and forth.
Sure, right.
They're going to come to my Baccarat tournament. They're going to go to a big slot tournament in Atlantic City. And you know what? They'll move around a little bit. But it's up to us as operators to make sure that we keep our facilities up. Our customer service has to be great. We have to introduce new product. If everybody does that, it's going to be okay.
Okay, great, great. So last question, Genting is one of the most successful casino companies in the world. I've had the luck to see all of their properties except for Malaysia, which I understand is that's the
unbelievable.
That's the capper of them
10, all. 10,000 hotel rooms on the
right,
top
right.
of a mountain. Unbelievable.
But their property in Singapore is incredible. You know, the Las Vegas property is second to none. And then, of course, your property's here in New York. So what's it like to work for somebody like K.T. Lim, who's, I think everybody agrees, is a visionary, and now he's got a lot of his family members involved. Mm-hmm. How do you make him happy with what you're doing here?
It's really been very interesting for me. I'll be shortly 7 years with the company. But I knew Chairman Lim from my days at Foxwoods, because mm-hmm. I was at
right.
Foxwoods for 10 years,
sure.
and they were the financial backers of
they
the
were.
Tribe. And so Chairman Lim would come in the early years, his dad, G.T. Lim,
right.
was really the founder of the company. They would make quarterly visits, and I would have to do presentations mm-hmm. and talk to them about it. At the time, I was head of marketing up at Foxwoods.
Right.
So I got to know the family, and it was kind of funny. The day that I left Encore Boston Harbor, I was driving home, and I got it. My phone rang, and it was Colin Au mm-hmm. from Genting.
Okay.
And because Wynn had simultaneously put out a press release and announced Brian Gilbrains was
right.
taking over for me there. And Colin called me up and he said, hey, we got a job. We need somebody in New York. When can you start? I said, Colin, I didn't even get home yet.
Right.
And I told my wife,
yeah.
God bless her, she's been with me all the way through this. We'll be married
all around
40 years. And I told her, maybe I'll take a little break. So the break was from when I drove from Encore to get to my house, and Colin was calling me up, said, Chairman says, when can you start? So in reality, it turned out very quickly.
Yeah.
I got a New York license, took the job, moved to Long Island in Oyster Bay, And the family, I'm glad you brought that up, because we're a publicly traded company, but it feels like a family business.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're right. It's not only is it Chairman Lim, his son Huey, mm-hmm. Who will, I think, ultimately wind up probably being the leader of the company down the road. They have a tendency to, you know, pass this down. Louis Lim, who does design and development, he was really behind a lot of the design for the Vegas property,
right. mm-hmm.
is great. Han Lim is also in the design and development group. So I feel like we're working for a family, but yet we're part of a large publicly traded company.
Sure.
But it makes it feel good. You know, they were in just recently. They took the management team. We went to Rockaway Beach, mm-hmm. and they did a little celebratory dinner for everybody getting through the opening. They're good people.
Yeah.
They're good people to work for.
Mm-hmm. And it's you know, exciting for them to really get here in New York and then really, you know, be the first ones in.
Well, and for the chairman, it was his dad's vision mm-hmm. That really started really now 60 years ago when you think about Genting, Malaysia.
Sure, right, yeah.
And they always wanted a full-scale integrated destination resort in New York.
Yeah.
That was a dream for years for the company.
Yeah.
And we feel really good that we were able to deliver for them.
Great, great. Well, Bobby, congratulations on what you've already accomplished here, but there's so much on the horizon that I'm going to have to come back year after year and catch up with everything that you add every year.
You're welcome anytime.
Okay,
Roger.
Great. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.